Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be the Buttle Show, but now it's the K. Show.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday. It's June 16th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours, the other 19 and a half. That is certainly your responsibility. The responsibility of the Nets season fell on the shoulders, the broad shoulders of Kevin Durant, and all he did was run with it and just burnish his legend. He is one of the best players who has ever lived, and the performance that he put on last night with the weight of the team and their playoff hopes on his back was just otherworldly. It was stupendous. It's hard to actually come up with the adjectives to properly sum up what he did. James Harden, I thought, was extraordinarily brave to go out there on half a leg and play 46 minutes. He obviously didn't do much offensively, but I think his presence and his ability to move the basketball and pick up 8 assists, I think that was important as well. But KD won the game. This was a team that was down 17 points in the third quarter. They took a lead in the fourth quarter. They had to hold off the Bucks. And this guy hit every big shot. P.J. Tucker could not stop him. P.J. Tucker was so tuckered out by trying to guard him that the bottom line is he didn't score any points whatsoever. So Milwaukee was playing with a four-man offense. And, you know, again, I know that sometimes we fall victim to immediacy. Oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Well, people I respect, columnists I respect, are saying it's one of the great playoff performances, at least in New York history. And I'll tell you what, it's one of the great clutch playoff performances you'll ever see. Forget about New York history. What this guy did working with a shorthanded team was nothing short of miraculous. It really was that good. And just remember, a couple of years ago, this guy collapsed on the court in the NBA Finals because his Achilles had torn. And everybody kept saying, well, he's not going to come back close to what he was. They're right. He's better. And he just proved it over and over and over again every time he stepped on the court during the season. But he put an exclamation point on it last night in Brooklyn. Guys, what a performance by Kevin Durant.
Well, the conversation about who the guy is on the Brooklyn Nets is over. That, I mean, maybe it was already over for some, but with how good Kyrie was times this season, and there was a period when Harden carried the team, but when push came to shove, in the most important moment since that team has been in Brooklyn, it was Kevin Durant. And you give all the credit in the world to Harden for showing up, because like you said, Michael, him being there as a decoy, it obviously changed the way that the Bucks approached the game completely. Late in the game, not only did you see the fact that Kevin Durant is the best player amongst his peers generally, but looking at him head-to-head with a two-time MVP, he's head and shoulders better than Antetokounmpo. And that was, they're very different players, but there's also no doubt that he's a more skilled player. It was the biggest moment of KD's career. I was frankly just blown away by his performance. You can't say enough about it.
No, it was astounding. And yeah, Harden's effort, he only had 5 points, but just being out there. But you brought up something that I think is really something to really discuss, and that is Giannis's performance. Forget about what the final stats were. You got to come up bigger than that in that spot. They had to know that was a game that they had to get, right? You had to get that game. You win that game, that series is over to me. And now you let them off the hook. And I just don't know how you can allow Harden to defend you. He's on one leg. Drive. You know, again, it's almost like he's afraid that he's going to get fouled.
There were multiple spots, Don, where you could really point. And listen, I feel bad comparing Giannis against KD heads up, although it's fair because they're both league MVPs. It's fine. But, I mean, KD is just such an out-of-this-world talent. Giannis is what his nickname is, the Greek freak. He's not the world's best basketball player. He's an athletic freak. The problem was, you guys saw it right in front of you. When he was able to catch the ball in the paint it seemed like he could really get the job done. Too often in important spots, Antetokounmpo would come to the top of the key to get the ball. When he'd get it, he either wouldn't be able to handle the ball or predictably drive, and Brooklyn would draw a charge. And then the worst spot may have been down to at the end of the game. He gets a feed inside and just drops the ball. Quite literally, yeah. Dropped the ball, and there went the hopes of the ball.
Because, Michael, you can look at the numbers, 34, 12, and 4, that you can't kill him. But when you watch that game, there were moments where if you have that killer instinct, that's the difference. Because it wasn't like they were blown out. They had the lead. They had a 17-point lead early on. Those last four possessions were brutal. They had a chance to win that game. So, yeah, you could look at the final numbers, but I don't know. I was left empty there, especially late, on why this guy just isn't doing what he has the capability of doing. So, he's afraid to get fouled? Is he afraid to go to the line? Why are you taking fadeaway jumpers? Drive the lane. Drive. You've got Harden on.
Harden called off the double team.
Right.
He knew he had him, and he did.
And, you know, Peter's talking about dropping the basketball. He was hit with a pass by Middleton that would have tied the game with about 20 seconds left. It would have been a dunk. Went through his hands. So, you know, I could see during the regular season where you can compile points because he's just such a physical marvel. But there are things that Kevin Durant does that Antetokounmpo simply can't. He doesn't have an outside game like Kevin Durant. I mean, he's been throwing up bricks from three-point land during this playoff series. Kevin Durant could break you down off the dribble. Giannis could kind of muscle you down below. But, you know, Giannis is a great player, but I think there's a huge difference between a Giannis and a LeBron and a Kevin Durant. And, when Giannis wins an MVP, I think people are just trying to be a little different. But if Kevin Durant plays a full season, you know, he's one of the greatest basketball players of all time. Again, that's not hyperbolic. He's one of the greatest to ever do it. At his size, he has skills of a point guard. He's amazing. And he was the point guard. When they finally realized that James Harden was an incredibly compromised player, Durant was starting the offense through him. He was bringing the ball up. This guy's a freak. You know, the Greek freak. Kevin Durant's a freak. At 7'1", with the ability to handle and cross over and break people down, rebound, block shots, the whole deal. He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. And when you say, you know, why do you put up with the load management days and, you know, the nastiness or whatever and, the demands, this is why. Because he's so special that you put up with it. You just do.
I always think about Larry Bird because he's my favorite childhood player. And because Larry was such a great shooter at 6'9". Kevin Durant is three or four inches taller. And dig this, he's a better shooter than Larry. He may be the best shooter I've ever seen. He's in the conversation with Steph Curry. That's the kind of lights-out shooter Durant is. And the reason this moment I feel so happy for the guy is, the number one criticism we have for him, obviously, and he earned this, by leaving OKC and going up against the team he couldn't beat in Golden State and joining up with them, he sort of earned this question of, can you be the guy? And last night, the load was fully on him, and he was the guy.
Now, I would have one little add-on to that, though. I don't think you could play 48 minutes for a whole playoff series. So for one game, with his extraordinary skill,
right? Yeah,
he could do it alone. I don't think he could win a championship alone because it's too much heavy lifting. No. I mean, 48 minutes for this guy, you could tell when Steve Nash spoke after the game, he almost sounded like he was choked up that they had to play him 48 minutes. He said, but sometimes extraordinary circumstances, you have to do things that make you feel uncomfortable. And Durant signed off on it as well.
Sure.
But is he going to be a compromised player on Thursday? Is he going to be exhausted? We'll see.
That's the next question. How do you handle Thursday if you're Brooklyn?
We know they have Harden is available. Kyrie is not. That's what we know right now.
What I'm saying is that, you know, Greeny made this point earlier today. Don't make it seem like you got to win two when you only need to win one. Now, game six is going to be tough anyway because it's in Milwaukee. They haven't lost a home game the entire playoffs. You got your best player coming off playing 48 minutes. You had James Harden coming up playing nearly 46 minutes on one leg. do you scale down their minutes, take the L, and make sure that these guys are ready to go for a game seven in Brooklyn? Can you afford to push them in a game you might not be able to get anyway and then compromise your chances for a game seven? You got to play them, but are you careful? Do you want to have that same performance in game six and not get the win? And then what are you going to have for game seven on Saturday?
And what about, like, and Don, particularly, do you just play it by ear? If they end up down 15-17 like they did in game five, I don't think you're fighting to make the comeback in the same way. I think you get down 15-17, you go, let's rest and play game seven.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting just not playing them or tanking the game by any stretch of the imagination. I just think that this is an unusual circumstance where, yeah, you play it straight for a half, and then you get a sense. Because I don't know if they can afford, Michael, to play that exact same game in Milwaukee, come up short, and then have the energy and the ability for a game seven on Saturday to be able to do it again facing elimination. So do you take advantage of the situation that you're in, play it by ear, like Peter said, and then if it looks like it's not going to happen, you can scale down their minutes so you don't get in a position. Because can Durant go out there? Remember, he's still coming off an injury from last year. That many minutes in a 48-hour period?
I understand what Greeny's saying. I understand what you're saying. I think it's very dangerous to play. Only we have to win one of the two. Anything could happen in a game seven. So if you call off the dogs, if you're down by 17, then you wouldn't have won this game. So it'll be very interesting to see the way they employ him. I don't think that he's going to play 48 minutes. I don't think it's needed because I think yesterday's game was a must win. Now, you do have some wiggle room that game six is not a must win.
Right.
So I don't think you're going to play him 24 minutes in the first half. So he'll have some rest time there. But I don't think you call off the dogs because this team has shown that it's very resilient and can come back. Anything can happen in a game seven. Somebody could turn their ankle. You don't ever want to leave it up to one game. If you have a chance to win tomorrow, you win tomorrow.
I'm with you. I'm usually always believe that, but these are unusual circumstances. He played 48 minutes because he had to play 48.
Right.
So you can go in and say, well, we're gonna be careful here, but you know, when they were down 17, they played them and they came back and they won the game. So you find yourself in a situation where what if you do that again and you come up short? Like, what can be the collateral damage of that? Like, because Harden played a lot of minutes, but he had just 5 points. Clearly, he was compromised. So do you maybe go, all right, well, listen, Durant's healthy. We're going to go full bore, and we're not going to play Harden and make sure that he's that much better for the potential game seven.
You know what? I don't think he's getting better. So I think this is the Harden you're going to get the rest of the way. So maybe a facilitator. I don't think he's going to be a big scorer. You know, he was 0-for-6 in the first half last night, two turnovers. He looked lost. He looked, half a step slow. Another problem is Joe Harris has disappeared, and that's a big part of this offense. And let's not forget to remind everybody how great Jeff Green was.
Yeah, man.
And it shows you how precarious what the Nets are trying to do. Jeff Green was in exhaustion, and he's playing with a very painful plantar fasciitis, and it comes down to this. You're in a situation where you lay it all out on the line, and he did. And his outside shooting in the first half actually kept him in the game. It would have been a 25-point deficit. That's how good Green was. Can he come back? Because when you're dealing with a plantar fasciitis, it's all about pain management. He must have been in excruciating pain. And, you know, I was in the car at the end of the game, and Chris Carino and Tim Capshaw interviewed him. He could hardly speak. He was so exhausted, he could hardly speak. So what's he going to have on Thursday? What is Durant's body going to give him after 48 minutes? So sometimes you rob Peter to pay Paul. So did they rob Peter, which would be Thursday, to pay Paul on Tuesday? I don't know. We'll see. And then I'm going to get Kyrie riding in on the white horse. It's just not. He can't do it.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it. And to counter Greeny's point is that if you could find a way to win game six, there's a tremendous amount of benefit there to be able to get the rest before the conference final. Because Philadelphia and Atlanta are even at two. So if you could finish this off in six, Michael, and that series goes seven, you know, however much rest you can get for all these guys is going to be huge. So you can kind of see both sides of it. Greeny's not suggesting they tank the game or not play them. But you just wonder, do you want to go dance that and how dangerous it could be if you came up short? But the counter to it is, if you don't come up short and you win – That extra rest going into the next round is going to be huge. And now you look how wide open things are. We haven't talked about the West yet with Kawhi being out for the Clippers.
Could be out for the remainder of the playoffs, too.
And now Paul in COVID protocol. You know, so you think things are, like, really opening up here. A very interesting 48 hours, or actually 24 hours for the NBA.
One other thing that stands out to me about last night's game was, did you guys realize, like, feel how much more passion and excitement there was in the building, on social media, just in the air, because they only had Harden and Durant? Like, to me, and it just made you realize that while it's really cool to put together an invincible super team, having two of them have to really fight for it made it feel much more special.
You know, I thought the exact same thing you did, because you heard Marv say that you can't hear in here how loud it was. And that's the first time that I really sensed the crowd in Brooklyn. Because, listen, they're getting abused on social media that they're still selling tickets day of the game, that people are generally not as interested as they would be if it was another team. But last night, to your point, now all of a sudden it's like equal footing, that it's not some super team that's going to cruise. I think that answered your question from last week, Michael. Is it good for the NBA if they cruise? No, it's not good. This is good for the NBA. Competitive basketball, single great performances, must-win situations, teams facing elimination, crossroads in their journey. That's what makes us watch sports. Not a team, not a super team that is compelling to watch because they're so great, but not being tested. So this could change everything, guys, right? Even if Kyrie comes back, the fact that they're facing this adversity and finding ways to win it, almost, not that it justifies the championship, but I think actually makes it more compelling, more interesting, and I think more believable to people, because nobody thought they would face this kind of adversity.
Now, I'm going to give you the list of NBA players to have 45 or more points, 15 or more rebounds, and 10 or more assists in a playoff game. Kevin Durant, that's the list. That's how special he was. So let's listen to Jay Will on KJZ this morning. You could hear it from 8 to 10 here on 98.7. He said this is KD's best performance ever.
KD and Kyrie often refer to themselves as artists. And last night I'm sitting there watching the game, and I'm saying to myself, this is the best single game performance in KD's career. I mean, 49 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, and I didn't want to break it down. You know I love breaking down games. I just sat back and said, damn, watching it. I started thinking about, okay, 2019, he dropped 50 versus the Clippers.
Yeah.
All right, but this, the way he impacted the game, the amount of pressure that was on him leading into this game. James Harden was out there with one leg. Kyrie Irving's on the sideline, you know what I mean? Like, it was KD. Obviously, other guys stepped up, but this game will go down as the moniker for KD's career. It really will, because he is this special of a talent offensively. He's the greatest scorer the game has ever seen. And last night proved it. It proved it.
Now here's his coach talking about Durant's historic game five.
Historic performance. I mean, he played the entire game. He barely missed, got to the line, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. I mean, 49 points. I mean, it's ridiculous what he's able to do. You know, we know he's capable of nights like this, but to do it tonight, you know, we lose Kai. You know, James obviously is soldiering through, you know, his ailments. We're down bodies, we're wounded. And for him to have the toughness, the mentality, you know, that's what makes him one of the all-time greats. And so this is a performance that, you know, a signature performance, you know, for Kevin. And it was beautiful to watch.
That's a great way to put it. If you're a sports fan, and there don't seem to be an inordinate amount of Net fans in this area, it was beautiful to watch. It's beautiful to see somebody rise to the occasion. It's beautiful to see somebody whose talents actually match the urgency of the moment, the enormity of the moment. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. This guy is a very, very special player. And I think sometimes we lose sight of how excited we should be that he performs in our city 41 times a year in a regular season. Because, you know, they look at KD and Kyrie, you know, mercenaries, they came here, you know, it's ruined the order, the new world order. Well, that is the new world order. And what we should do is that we should take a guy like Durant and cherish the fact that we get to see him play. And Kyrie, no less an authority than Bob Cousy, says the greatest point guard he's ever seen. These two are working together. And then, oh, yeah, let's throw in James Harden, who is also one of the probably the, one of the top 20 players whoever lived. So they have three of the top 20 players who ever lived playing in our backyard. And yesterday, he took it in another step. Because sometimes the three of them, their glaring talent blinds us of their individual talent. But working alone, you know, it's like Gladys Knight stepping out from the Pips. You could see how great Gladys Knight is. Paul McCartney stepping away from the Beatles. You could see how great Paul McCartney is. Well, yesterday, he stepped away, and his light shined brightly. I mean, he was amazing. Amazing. We will be talking about this for a long time. Now, if they go on to win a title, it will be a forever conversation. That's how often we'll talk about it. But he's pretty damn special. He really is. I know there are things about Durant that, you know, the general public sometimes doesn't like. I think he's essentially a decent dude who obviously, like most players in all sports that are stars today, they know that they are the show and that they have the power. And I give him credit. He's exerted that power, and the Nets have allowed him to, and the NBA has allowed all these players to do that. So forget about that and just watch what he does. And what he did last night was pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We don't get a chance to see performances like that a lot.
But there's still work to be done, right? Because just like anything else, how will this be remembered if they lose the series?
Like you remember the catch in the World Series.
You know, so you got – so this puts a little bit even more pressure. Now we know he can do it, and now you got to – he's probably going to have to do it again because Kyrie's not coming back. Harden's not going to all of a sudden – be able to find what he was before the hamstring. So it'll take – now he's got to do it, you know, on the road, and it doesn't have to do it because they've got that Game 7 looming, but, you know, still that he's going to have to do it at least one more time, you would think, in order to be able to win this series. And how will people look at it if he doesn't do it again and they lose the series? How unfair that might end up being. You know, all greatness, all the great moments, Michael, are encapsulated by you winning the championship.
By the way, I threw out the name Larry Bird earlier. Dig this. For Larry's career, 24-10-6, his average. KD is 27-7-4. But listen to the shooting stats. That's what I was talking about, how good shooters they were. Larry, for his career, 49.6 from the field, 37.6 from three, 88.6 from the free throw line. KD, for his career, 49.4% from field goal, 38.4 from three, 88.3 from free throw, almost identical. And in the 2021 season, which KD's played, he played 35 games. This year, 53.7 from the floor, 45% from three, and 88.2% from the free throw line. Michael, to your point, he has been better when he's been playing post the injury.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which is amazing because everything would point to that you just don't regain the elasticity or the explosiveness that you had before the injury. But, you know, one of the reasons he came to the Nets, I'm convinced, is that their doctors and their performance team are hailed throughout the NBA, and that's known by players. And they took their time with him. They could have rushed him back to the bubble. They did not do that because they knew that the big payoff would be this year. And he is fully healed. And as Mike Greenberg would say, back and better than ever. Maybe even better than ever. It's just amazing.
Well, I also need to know, Peter, I've never heard you say dig this, and now you said it twice in the same segment. Did you see the Warriors last night? What happened?
It's a great – I don't know what happened.
Did you ever hear him say dig this, and he did it twice in the same segment?
Listen, I got a lot of things to say about him today. I'm going to save it. I'm not going to.
It's so predictable. I know what it's going to be. Just get it out of the way.
I don't know what it's going to be.
No, I have a lot of things to say.
It's going to be about a tweet, isn't it?
Don't you worry about it. I got a lot of things to
Don,
say. You've become a little bit of a mah annoyance, which is bigger than an annoyance. And you've alienated a lot of people. Let's put it that way.
But no, not me, because I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, thank you, Don.
When I tell you this, you'll feel alienated. You feel like we're not on the same plane as him. 1-800-919-3776. We take your phone calls. This portion of the Michael K Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. Kayla Greca, Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody. It's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
So this is the first installment of Who You're Taking Out. What we're going to do now, since we've got such a sample size of top fives, that when something happens that maybe you now want to include, who are you going to take out of the original top five? So back on April 8th of 2020, in the infancy of the pandemic, I had a top five greatest playoff performances. So I'll read them off to you, and then you tell me if you want to go one by one.
But here's the fallacy of this endeavor, and it was pointed out by a very bright listener. The number five one is who you're taking out. That was the last one in. So who are you rearranging? But it's an easy question. If Durant enters the top five, number five has to leave.
Well, that's if you agree with the top five to begin with. You may not agree.
But it's your opinion.
I understand that. And listen, then ultimately I'm the one that has the final say. But that's not how this is going to work, because you argue with me all the time when I do the top five. So this
that's
is not set in
segment,
stone as far as the show is concerned.
Sure.
If I make this into a book, Michael, then it is set in stone. It's my opinion. But
also, let's be real with all of these lists. The order is the most subjective of anything.
Sure.
Like the difference between five and three can basically be nothing.
All right. So since everybody seems to think that five would be the weakest link here,
let's start with
one.
Okay.
I had number one, Don Larson's perfect game. You taking that out?
No, you're not taking that out.
No. I had number two, Mark Messier's guarantee game in game six of the 1994 Eastern Conference Final, a hat trick to win the game.
Hard to take that out.
Hard to take it out. I'm not taking that out. Now, number three was Reggie Jackson's three home run performance in Game 6 of the 77 World Series. That was the clinching game.
Got him a candy bar.
Wait, it was the clinching game?
Yeah.
Yes.
Three home runs.
On three pitches.
Yep. Okay. Four runs scored, five RBIs, 3-for-3. 8-4 win. You taking that out, Peter?
No.
No, I'm not.
Okay, number four was Walt Frazier's Game 7 performance in the 70 NBA Finals. 36 points, 19 assists, 7 rebounds, and a 113-99 win. That was a Game 7 of the Finals, so it's not going anywhere to me.
That's tough. It's the most movable of the first four.
Yes.
But that's very tough.
Now, was KD's game, quote-unquote, better? Yes, but even though I think it would have been very difficult to win the series, they're not eliminated. If he doesn't have that performance, this is game seven.
Now, I will tell you one thing, though, that might make Frazier's performance better. The Lakers were infinitely better than the Bucks are.
Okay. But Peter's right. This is the first one we had to think about.
I didn't, but go on. Go ahead.
Okay. And number five was Phil Simms' Super Bowl 21 performance, 22 of 25, 268 yards, 3 touchdowns, a 150.9 quarterback rating, and he won the Super Bowl MVP.
Well, I'm going to surprise both of you, I think. I'm not moving any of those five. I don't think he gets in.
Who are you taking out?
I'm not taking out any of them.
No one's going to like this, but I could talk about the Phil Simms. I got to go back, but like I know the Simms stats in that game were incredible, but was it really that epic a performance?
Yes.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to rewatch it because I don't remember it that way.
Well, since no quarterback has ever had such a performance before or since, I think it would fall under the heading of epic.
I mean, he threw three incompletions.
Yeah, I understand, but how long were his completions?
Oh, yeah. He threw 22 screen passes.
That's what I think of Phil Sims doing a lot. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think of a heavy dose of Joe Morris. I don't think of a passing machine.
I think you're going to agree on that. You're going to have to leave the show. If you're going to besmirch Phil Sims, leave.
Phil Sims is an average – he's an average Super Bowl quarterback. Now, that performance wasn't average.
No, he's not. He's a borderline Hall of Famer.
Oh, not a borderline Hall of Famer. Nothing better than a borderline Hall of Famer, except every Hall of Famer –
All right.
Right, but there's not that many Hall of Famers. And you could make the argument that Phil Sims belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Is anyone going to argue about whether or not KD belongs in the Hall of Fame?
Nope.
No.
He could have left for the Hall of Fame 3 years ago.
Hall of Fame. Should we take him out then?
Oh, great point.
Don't compare a perfect game in the World Series to what Sims did.
But Phil Sims almost quarterbacked a perfect game. Look at his quarterback rating. That was almost a perfect game.
And let's face it, we're not even having this conversation if the Nets end up losing.
Well, that's really why it's too early to have the conversation.
But now, obviously, the Super Bowl is an elimination game, but the Frazier one was Game 7. The Jackson one was a Game 6 in which clinched the series. Messier was a Game 6, so that would be somewhat similar to KD's, but they were facing elimination, so no. And then the Don Larson, it's a perfect game. And also, what gets lost in the perfect game, Michael, and you probably know, that was in a 2-2 series.
And
so that
was a close
pivotal
game, too.
Pivotal game five.
It wasn't a perfect game that he could coast. He needed every out.
No, the game was 2-0, and it was a game five of a 2-2 series. So that's not nothing sauce right there. So I'm not moving any of these five.
Even if the Nets win
the title, I'm not moving any of these five. How about that?
Wow. I think I agree with that, too.
Well, that was a big waste of time.
No, it wasn't. Well, it's not a waste of time, Peter. What it did was get us having a conversation about sports. I don't know. Waste of time is strong coming from you. Wasted a lot of time with you.
Really?
Yeah. Let's open some time. Cards, okay?
No, let's take some phones on. Let's take some calls on how the iPhone works.
Hey, listen. I think we're all guilty of wasting time on this show. So I don't think any of us could really accuse anybody else of wasting time. You're right, Peter.
Phil Sims' long pass was pretty impressive. He had a 44-yarder to Phil McConkey. He had a 36-yarder to Stacey Robinson. And after that, a 23-yarder as well. I'm just being honest. I'm not a Giants fan. I did live through that Super Bowl, though. I'm not saying he wasn't great. I don't know how often outside of New York people go, oh, my God, that game, that Phil Sims Super Bowl game. I know the stats show he had a nearly perfect game. But
You're wrong.
Go ahead.
I took a vacation in Turks and Caicos like a couple of years ago. Everybody was talking about Phil Sims.
Really?
Yeah.
Right
Turks
now.
And Caicos. No, this was like 3 years ago.
And they were still talking Sims.
Of course. It's one of the great performances ever.
Right. Well, I've been to Turks.
If Don did a list of great postseason performances, not forget about New York, that would be in the discussion.
No one.
Oh, my God.
It would. Hold on. It's number five on Don's list. You think it's going to make it through every Jordan, Magic, Elway performance of all time?
What's bigger?
Gretzky, Lemieux.
What is bigger than the Super Bowl? Nothing. And that's probably the greatest quarterbacking performance in the history of the Super Bowl. So, yeah, it would be in any discussion. Sorry. If he wore a Redskin helmet, then you'd be going
oh my
gaga
God, forget
over
about it. You know, his dog, it wouldn't be Bear. It would be Sims.
I mean,
you worship at the altar of Sonny Jurgensen, and you're going to downfill Sims? I'm sorry. I won't take it.
I mean, listen, let's just be clear. The Washington football team played that same Broncos team and destroyed them. Absolute destruction.
Well, take a look at the score. The Giants destroyed them too.
Not as much as we did.
Oh boy!
That's the way we're doing it.
Well, by the way, let's just be real though. You can't tell me, Don, that it's number five on the New York list and would also be in the conversation of the everything list. I'm sorry.
It
shouldn't be number five on Don's list. Then there's something wrong with the list.
Wait a minute.
But I would tell you that the top five in New York would be in the discussion for all time as well. Don Larson's one of the all-time great big games. Messier scoring a hat trick in an elimination game where he guaranteed they win is one of the all-time greats. Walt Frazier's game is historic in NBA annals. Historic.
Of course. Well, of course it is. That's the most, I would say that's the most nationally famous of everything on the list.
I mean, if you want to really want to get into...
You don't think Don Larson's perfect game is nationally famous?
I don't talk to people who care about Don Larson. Not one person has ever mentioned Don Larson to me. You know why? I don't hang out in an old age home.
Oh, my.
What a jerk.
You know what?
I'm not saying it's not important, but how often am I talking about Don Larson? I'm saying in terms of national conversation that I've heard about in my lifetime, the Frazier one's the biggest one nationally. I'm sorry.
But also, they're not talking about the Jackson three home runs either.
No.
Your circles.
No.
I might have to pick apart Peter when we get back. The Michael K. Show.
Dave Rothenberg sent a text saying, if Sims comes off the list, the segment dies.
Oh, God. Well,
I've never been in more lockstep with the guy who wears a shirt at the pool, ever.
And by the way, Don, does getting that statement from Dave Rothenberg do anything for you?
And
like,
welcome
does
aboard.
It even solidify you in any way?
I'd be surprised if he didn't send it. I mean, he's Giant fan. So it's a biased opinion, but it's an opinion. And
Kerry
one
Collins
I agree
is
with.
On Rothenberg's top five, something that Kerry did in the fifth game of a season. The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico.
Sure.
The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. Nope. Also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Peter moved on to a list that I don't like to even talk about earlier today.
Wow.
And to piggyback it on his Sims dismissal makes him in line for one of the top five jerk wagons of all time.
It's not, it wasn't dismissal, by the way. It wasn't dismissal. I was just saying.
It was a diminishment.
It was the
top
one.
Five, how about top five nozzle?
I was going to save that, but yeah, that's exactly what was going to be the whole premise of the segment. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
I don't talk to people who care about Don Larson.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
You know, before I stir-fry Peter right now.
Please, I welcome it.
I want to send out birthday wishes.
Okay.
And I think you guys will also echo this. Do we have disagreements with this gentleman? Of course we do. But do we love him? Of course we do. Is he one of the great bosses that anybody could have? Of course he is. Happy birthday to the great Tim McCarthy.
Oh, I got to send a text. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Wow. I wish you told me before so I could have texted first, because now if he's listening, I get no credit for the text.
Yeah, that's exactly why I didn't tell you.
Happy
nice
birthday.
Day. He's not listening.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
What'd you say, Don?
He said it's a nice day. He's not listening.
No, he's listening. He listens every day.
He might be on the seventh right now, playing a little golf today. I hope he's doing something lovely on his birthday.
He might be on the seventh tap. That's what he's on.
Oh, wow.
Well, both can be accomplished. That's the beauty of golf, as I've been told by people.
All right. So this is a tweet, Donald. This is new to you.
Yes.
Sent by Peter Rosenberg earlier today. Ready?
Yes.
Anybody ever use one of these shared private jet companies? Not one you buy into permanently, but use on a per-flight basis. I have questions. Now, there was one word as I read that tweet that resonated with me.
Go ahead.
Nozzle!
Okay.
I want you, and you wonder why Chris Carlin is the god that he is. You know what he answered back on Twitter, Don?
What was that?
This was pretty good.
Yes. I share about 150 other passages on a company called United. Look into it. I mean, are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Have your way.
No. Listen, this does it itself. I don't have to do anything. What a Nas.
Is there a way that you can find out without having to go public like that, Peter?
I did it for a reason, to see to, number one, find out if I could get any names. And number two, sometimes the things get retweeted and the company sees it themselves and then they
reach
out.
And you want a free gig.
Of course I do, because I have a weekend coming up that is borderline unmanageable. And the trip would be made so much better if I could get a private flight. So I thought, because of the cool things I'm doing, which include SummerSlam in Las Vegas on a Saturday night, and doing and having to be at Summer Jam at MetLife Stadium on Sunday morning, I thought I could maybe work something out with a private flight company where they get advertising on the video and social media, and I get a ride. I have zero care for the people who think it was nozzle-ish, or here's some tweets I got. Peter, do you really think it's fair that at this time, with what people are going through, you put that out there? Stop crying. I wasn't saying I have money. You think if I was really that rich, I'd tweet about it? The people who, I would just have a private jet. I've never been on a private jet. But I'd like to try to angle for one day. Sue me. Sue me.
Can I give you a little friendship advice? This is really serious stuff.
Go ahead.
We work in sports talk radio.
Okay.
Three guys just talking to guys and gals.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen in this market.
What?
Somebody gets so successful and flaunts their wealth, how they get first row seats and they're at every single event, it plays against you. You become a nozzle.
But I'm not rich. That's why I was seeking a free ride. If people don't understand that, that's on them.
I don't get it.
Well,
First of all, don't you have agents coming out of your yin-yang? So why don't you have them maneuver for you to get a free flight rather than putting it out there?
Because I don't care.
Because you're rich enough to actually have enough jobs that you need a free flight.
Hold on. Two things. Number one, because I don't care. I truly, if people pass judgment on me publicly saying I'm looking to find out about this, which means clearly I've never been on one in my entire life. Because I could never afford a private jet. In fact, I only started to ever sit in a first-class seat when the prices were so reduced during COVID that I was able to upgrade for $150. I've never even been first class. So for me to then turn around and feel bad because other people are like, oh, how dare you bring this up publicly? I am very honest about my level of success, how much money I have. I live in a regular apartment in New York City. I grind for everything I have. So for someone to get mad because I was seeking out a hookup or call me a nozzle, that is just fine. I am totally good with it. I'm not rich. Don't come from being rich. And I hope one day to be rich. And the way to do that, I found, is to get the hookup when you can. That's what I've learned. And furthermore, I would like to double down on my Phil Simms statement and call him the Trent Dilfer of the 80s. A boring, bland Super Bowl quarterback who outside of New York, no one ever thinks of. And I heard from Giants fans who would have taken him off that list. Giants fans.
Yeah, they're going to have to step up. Don, I love your take on this because you are the everyman. Please comment on the free private jet. And comment on his asinine Phil Simms take.
All right. We'll take it the first things first, all right? Peter, if he can take it, then it's okay. Like, he understands. He doesn't care. He doesn't care what people are going to think. I mean, I think it would be a good idea that maybe you go through different channels, but he didn't seem to care about how the abuse he was going to get for it. So, I guess more power to him. He didn't care about being a nozzle if it was going to get him what he wants.
Of course not.
But isn't that the definition of a nozzle?
Well, no, who am I caring about? Some hater who's sitting there online and going, this sounds really inappropriate. Do I go in the comments of every celebrity who posts himself on a beautiful vacation and go, hey, you know, people are really going through hard times. You don't really need to rub in your face that you're in Turks and Caicos.
That's a dumb take, whoever sent you that. I'm just saying that you have 7 Z's in nozzle for putting that out there.
Well, then what's
nothing to do with the hard times. Nozzle. And you're using your celebrity and all your followers to try to get something that the average Joe and Jill can't get.
Hold on. What? First of all, I didn't say. You made me explain what I was doing here, so I'm going to be honest and explain what I was doing. That's not what the tweet said. The tweet said just, has anyone have any experience? I have questions. That's it. That it was the only question. Now, since you've levied this major attack against me, I will reveal the truth that I was trying to see if I could get an opening to one of these companies and find one that might be able to do work with me. Listen, if it's considered nozzle-ish to work whatever angle you have to get a hookup on something that would otherwise be outside your budget, call me a nozzle, baby.
It's not outside your budget, though.
Of course it is.
What you made in Jamaica, you could get a private jet to California. Stop it.
Wait, and I would take my entire paycheck and fork it over to get a private jet? That's moronic. Why would someone do that? What kind of, and by the way, how did I get to my position of having some level of influence to be able to get these things?
By working hard.
Exactly. So why should I feel bad about it? If one person wants to cry about it, suck it up and work harder. I thought I was the snowflake. They're going to sit around and complain because I'm working my tail off to be able to be in that situation? I don't feel bad about that. Now, if I got it and flaunted it and was a jerk about it, or ever did that about anything in a way that was rude or looked down to people, then call me a nozzle all day. But to hustle to try to get the opportunities, that making me a nozzle? No, 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 sir. That makes you a hater.
Don, please, any more?
Well, we didn't even get to the Phil Simms thing.
Yeah, I know. You have to address that.
Peter, you can have your opinion on that performance. But if you're going to say he's the Trent Dilfer of the 80s, you're out of your mind. And if people only care about – he's a nobody that just happened to win a Super Bowl, only people in New York care. And yet for how long, Michael, was he the number one analyst on CBS?
That's not a good argument.
Why is that not a good argument?
Because he's a great talker.
But if he was a nobody, you think he would get a chance at that? He was great at what he did, but he got the opportunity because he was a Super Bowl winning quarterback and a New York quarterback.
199 over 157 for his career. 199 over 157. That guy's is pedestrian. He also played with the best defense in football. He's a guy who had a great team of which the top three stars were on the other side of the ball.
But you're wrong. He's not a pedestrian player. He was a really good player, and the only thing that derailed him was injuries to put him in the Hall of Fame. He's a great quarterback.
And listen, don't look at the stats from 30 years ago in the NFL, okay? When Kurt Warner was on the greatest show on turf and didn't even throw for 4,000 yards.
Yeah, but his
right?
but
they
his,
won a Super Bowl. He was 10-0 in the season in which he blew out his Achilles and couldn't be on the Super Bowl 25 team. Otherwise, he would have won two Super Bowls. And really, outside of Mark Bavaro, who was he throwing the ball to? Phil McConkie?
That's fair.
All right? So it wasn't like he was throwing to Jerry Rice. He wasn't throwing to the greatest wide receivers of all time.
Listen, I'm overstating.
Overstating. I understand you were frustrated, and you're entitled to your opinion about him being in the top five or whatever, but you got a little crazy.
I got
a little kooky because you got upset.
I admit that, okay? A little bit out of line.
Are you mad because Phil Simms beat the Redskins three times in one season? Are you mad about that?
No, I don't dislike Phil Simms at all. Played in
crap weather, wind tunnel of a stadium. Yeah, he was bad.
But hold on, but he's not. You even said it yourself. The best you can say is he'd be a borderline Hall of Famer.
But that's a pretty damn good quarterback.
It is a pretty damn good quarterback. But my question is, how many Super Bowls would he have if he didn't have the greatest defense in the NFL or defense in the NFL?
Oh, my
How many Super Bowls
gracious.
Does Joe Montana have three of those four Super Bowls if it wasn't, throwing the ball to Jerry Rice?
You don't think Tom Brady had a good defense? He had one of the great defensive minds as the head coach of the team.
Yeah, I mean, that is very true.
And he's not in the stratosphere of a Young or a Montana or a Brady. That's why we're saying borderline Hall of Famer. But you know what, Michael? I think if he gets that second championship at Super Bowl 25, he's a Hall of Famer.
I agree.
Also, Mark Roseman, a buddy of mine, sent me a text. Awesome yesterday. Mike wouldn't spring for $12 a year for the cloud storage, but Peter's looking for a private jet to share. That's what makes you guys great.
Now, Jar from Oz, I mean, he's a really good chronicler of the show. This is what he tweeted out. I mean, he really gets it, Don. Peter's new album success has him feeling super secure. Talk of private planes, Grammys, and now snaps at K, essentially calling him old. In a word, ..
Wait, when did I call him old?
At the end of the last segment.
What do you mean?
You called both of us old.
No, I said I don't have conversations about Don Larson.
Well, you know what? Don Larson became even more relevant because of Wells and Cone pitching perfect games. It brought him back into the forefront where younger people would know.
The only point I was making, and you never agree with me on this, is that for someone to talk about a Don Larsen, for example, you have to be intensely in a baseball circle, intensely a Yankees fan, or be watching a World Series game in which the pitcher has a no-hitter through seven innings. Otherwise, like if I were to go through my friends who are not Yankee fans, they're just sports fans in general, and say, tell me about Don Larsen. Maybe they know who he is, but he's not part of the regular vernacular. That's all I was saying before you jumped me.
Anthony, can you do me a favor, please? Can you get Rothenberg on the phone? Because I'd like Rothenberg to pick apart Rosenberg like he's a chicken at KFC. That's what I'd like.
You know, listen, and by the way, I understand that if we start getting into the – they're going to be able to present arguments – that will be hard for me to rebut because I won't have statistical evidence to back it up. But I watched Phil Simms' career. He was good. He was good. That's it. He was good.
He was just below great.
What, you know what just below great is? Good.
No. It's
what I just
really
said.
Good. Outstanding. You're making him out
to
be
a very good quarterback.
You're making him out to be good. He's more than good.
But
you're making him out to be who's the right? Andy Dalton. He's not Andy Dalton.
No, he had a much better career than Andy Dalton. I'd say skill level, he's around Andy Dalton.
But it's what you do with your skill.
Yeah, well, Andy Dalton was stuck in Cincinnati, and
he had a great arm, man. Great arm.
Of course he did. He was a Super Bowl quarterback. He was in the NFL for years, no doubt. But he also had, you know, Pepper Johnson and Carl Banks and Lawrence Taylor and an incredible defense.
That defense didn't do anything for him in the Super Bowl by missing just three passes. That was him. That was his offense.
And someone tried to come after me. Well, how, Rosenberg, you embarrass yourself. Why would you look at the length of passes down the field? Like there's not a difference between going 22 of 25 if 18 of them were screens? Of course there's a difference.
Let's shift for a moment.
I mean, forget about whether it's a part of the history of the people that you talk to about Don Larsen. Nobody's pitched a perfect game before or since then in the playoffs.
Well, but I didn't rule that should be out. I didn't think that should even be out.
No, but I mean, yeah, so they're not talking about Don Larsen because, and listen, Don Larsen pitched a perfect game before Michael and I were born. But for some reason, and I will say get off my lawn, whatever, and I'm not talking about everybody, but when I was younger, I wanted to know the history. I cared about the history. I paid attention to it. But you'd have to admit, Peter, this younger generation, if it didn't happen in front of them, they don't care. And that's a shame from a sports fan. You should really look to see the history and pay attention to the history instead of disregarding it because it didn't happen during your generation or the time that you were alive.
Well, and in particular for baseball, which has had a rough few years when it comes to translating to a younger generation. By the way, does it hurt Phil Simms at all that when he was unavailable, Jeff Hostetler stepped in with the same team and won the Super Bowl too?
But that Super Bowl was definitely won because of defense. They kept the ball out of the hands of Jim Kelly. Jeff Hostetler was a game manager in essence. Phil Simms was not a game manager against Denver.
Does it hurt Joe Montana that Steve Young was able to go and win a Super Bowl after Montana left?
Well, Steve Young went on to become one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
No, but he's not Joe Montana. I mean, everything is individual, right? I mean, everybody's – you think those 49er defenses weren't great? Of course they were great.
No,
Dwight Clark was a really great wide receiver, and Roger Craig, and then eventually Jerry Rice and John Taylor.
But for the sake of this conversation, you don't think we're talking down the Giants' defense a bit?
No, this Giants' defense is great, and their coach was a big defensive guru, and so was their assistant.
And isn't it what defined those Super Bowl teams?
The Denver win in the Super Bowl, they outscored them by a lot.
Well, no, the defense gave up 20 points that day.
Well, LeBron James has spoken out, everybody. The playoffs are somewhat tainted this year because of all the great players that are out because of injuries, including LeBron, now Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, James Harden. The list goes on. Chris Paul with, you know, COVID protocol. But this is what James tweeted out earlier this hour. They all don't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and benefit of our game. These injuries isn't just part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest. Rest before starting back up. 8, possibly 9 All-Stars has missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best time of the year for our league and fans, but missing a ton of our favorite players. It's insane. If there's one person that know about the body and how it works all year round, it's me. I speak for the health of all of our players, and I hate to see this many injuries this time of the year. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all your favorite guys right now. Well, what does LeBron want the NBA to do? When should they have started? Did they all want to get paid 100%?
He said that today.
Yeah, that's what he said today. Tweeted out. Also, do they all want to get paid 100% of their salary, which is exactly what they're getting paid for playing 10 fewer games. So if he really wanted them to rest and start the season in January, were you willing to accept 50% of your pay?
Well, also, today's a weird day to choose to say that, considering I feel like every NBA fan is so satisfied with what they got last night.
And also, Peter, Kyrie Irving felt, you know, came down on somebody's foot. That has to do with lack of rest. Maybe Harden does. Chris Paul's in COVID protocol. Does that have to do with lack of rest? Kawhi Leonard banged knees with an opposition player. Does that have to do with lack of rest? Maybe LeBron's injury, you know, muscle injuries like what Harden has, what LeBron had. Yeah, maybe. But LeBron also turned his ankle, a high ankle sprain. I don't know if that could be attributed to lack of rest.
But I'd like to know what his alternative was, because we're all going through it. You know, I'm sure baseball players are feeling, a lot of these pitchers are going to feel it in the second half of the season after not having a full season to pitch last year. You know, the NHL players are going through the exact same thing the NBA was going through. The only one that seems exempt is football, because they were able to keep their regular schedule, Michael. But were these leagues all supposed to just skip this season?
I really would like to – Anthony, get him on the air after Rothenberg. We'll ask him. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Dave Rothenberg is going to ring in the star of DCR, well, one of the stars. He'll join in, and it's just pillory, Peter. NetJets.
So far,
on the,
I haven't been pilloried.
You will be. NetJets okay. On the line for you, by the way. They've got free jets for you.
Ooh, thank you.
Yeah. They're willing to do it for your
family. It's all fun and games till I get a jet. You'll see.
And if you feel good about sitting there sipping champagne, good. I hope you feel great about it.
Why wouldn't I?
Why don't you call Vince McMahon and say, listen, I'm going back and forth the country for you. Get me a jet.
I don't know if I'm his priority for that weekend. I want to keep my job.
Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Here's the question, Don, first off.
Yes.
So, Gerrit Cole's pitching tonight.
Yes.
Gerrit Cole likes to pitch to Kyle Higashioka. Is it really worth it to sit down Gary Sanchez now? I mean, if you're Gerrit Cole, don't you think it's probably in your best interest to be able to pitch to Gary Sanchez? When you consider how, I mean, he's otherworldly hot after not hitting for a while. He can't be stopped. I have some numbers right here. Last 15 games, he's hitting 17 for 51. That's .333. Four homers, nine ribbies. Getting on base about 40% of the time. Slugging at .647. Now, Kyle Higashioka is not an automatic out, but is it worth it to give up that? He's raised his average from .174 to .225. Is it worth it to give up that kind of offensive firepower on a team that doesn't or hasn't been scoring runs most of the year just because you get to pick to your favorite player?
Well, I mean, listen, if Gerrit Cole is one of the best pitchers in baseball, and I believe he is, all right, then some random game against the Blue Jays, I'm sorry, I gotta keep one of my hottest players in there. So you're telling me Cole can't pitch to Sanchez? Just can't do it. He did it on opening day.
Yeah, I don't know.
So if you're telling me that you have no chance because Cole is not going to be able to get through the first inning because Sanchez is catching him, then, well, yeah, the game's too important. But I'm sorry, this is too good a pitcher. So I've got to make sacrifices here, and whatever I lose because Sanchez is behind the plate with Cole, I'm accepting that if I'm going to be able to get Sanchez to bat four or five times on a team that has really struggled to score runs. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Sanchez is my catcher tonight.
And if he can't do it, then the whole thing, the whole joke about, well, there's no personal catcher, I'm sorry, that's not true. Because you can't give up Gary Sanchez's offensive firepower now because you have a personal catcher. And you're right, great pitchers should be able to pitch to anybody. Yeah, they're more comfortable pitching to guys that they're really, really comfortable with.
Yeah.
But, you know, other players have no problem pitching to Gary Sanchez.
Listen, to me, having a personal catcher is a luxury that right now the Yankees can't afford to have in certain situations. Now, if Sanchez isn't hitting, it's a different story. But with the way Sanchez is hitting right now, I'm sorry, that is a luxury that they cannot afford. Every game is important. You're 8 games out of first place. All right? Yeah, you scored a bunch of runs last night, but you haven't been doing it on a consistent basis. And I think you got to find a way to put him in the lineup. That's a luxury that I don't think they can afford right now.
All right, now let's also break down what the Mets are doing. It's extraordinary. When you look at their lineup, it's not a great lineup. It's got third-string players that weren't even on the 40-man roster when all this began. Guys like Billy McKinney and Mason Williams, and they're playing huge roles with this team. And then you get one of the best signings of the offseason was Taijuan Walker by the Mets.
Yeah.
This guy's been great.
Well, after the game, he had like a moment, I don't know if you heard it.
No.
Where he said that, you know, he was destined to be a Met because they were the only team to offer him a contract. And he is pitching tremendously. Right now, it's between him and Stroman, who's the number two starter. Now, I understand Walker is as far as, like, the way the rotation is, but he's pitching every bit as good as Stroman is. And that's great to have three legitimate starters now with the possibility of getting Syndergaard back at some point before the season is over. And you know what, Michael? We talk so much about the stars, and I saw him in San Francisco a lot when he was with the Giants. Every team needs a Kevin Pillar. Now, is he a star? No, he's not a star. But he's a very good player. He's great in that room, and he makes good plays. Last night, hitting the cutoff man, cutting off that run down in the ninth inning, that's a big play in the game. That's a huge play in the game, and he makes it. He works pitches. He's a really good outfielder. So is he a star that comes to mind? Is he Lindor? Is he Alonso? Is he DeGrom? No, but you need players like that, day in, day out players. And, boy, they love him in that room, and he's as important as anybody. Lindor's starting to hit, and the moment came. 2-out double by Smith, where maybe Lindor could have scored. They held him at third. That put the pressure on Alonso to get a hit, and what does he do? Bang, first pitch, gets a hit, 2-run score, tie game. And Walker didn't allow a sniff after giving up that 2-run home run to Baez. I think the Mets, as a whole, I think retired 16, 17 guys in a row. Wow. They're pitching great. They're situationally hitting. It's a lot of fun watching this team right now. And you mentioned it. It wasn't like the Cubs are slouches. They came in hot.
No, red hot. One of the hottest teams in baseball. I'm a little unsure, Don. Who's starting tonight?
Oh, that's Jacob DeGrom.
Oh, Jakester.
He's back.
Yeah. Better than ever. Frank Trainer from Hillsdale, New Jersey is the first winner. And Patrick Breen from the Bronx is the second winner of the signed Center Stage books. They're on sale now. There's actually bookstores that are physical bookstores that are opening. And Mike Greenberg told me that the greatest feeling he's ever had in all the things he's done in his career was when he wrote his book and walked into a bookstore and actually saw a display. So he urged that I should do that. I don't know if I will.
You should. It's one of like Dave Maloney's favorite things to do on the road. Like wherever we are with the Rangers, just walk into a bookstore or order a coffee and just start reading.
No, I would. You should never read in a bookstore without buying the book. That's disgraceful.
No, but he buys the book.
Okay,
what's the matter with you? He buys the book when he buys the coffee. He doesn't walk in with a coffee. He buys the book with the coffee. He sits down and he reads it.
All right, I didn't know that. I thought he was just snoring.
What do you think? He treats it like a library?
Yeah, a lot of people do.
These cities have libraries, too. He chooses the bookstore because he purchases.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is this. My iPad did just die.
So oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm glad I've remembered the next read. Anyway, let's go to Chris in Patchogue. Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Don, just wanted to throw an honorable mention out to the list you put out today. Mm-hmm. I want to throw Hideki Matsui, Game 6 of the 2009 World Series.
Yep.
Yeah, drove in 6 of the 7 Yankees runs, and, it was a clincher. It was an elimination game, but it was a clincher. So.
Yeah, listen, it was a great game, 3-for-4. As you said, a home run, a double, 6 of the 7 runs driven in by him. But, you know, like I said, it was an elimination game. It was a big game. But, Michael, I'm comfortable not putting that in the top 5.
Come on. Stop. All right. I mean, it was a great game, but it's one of the great New York games of all time. The blowout game. Now, it was a blowout because of him, but I'm sorry. I'm not putting that in the top whatever.
I don't know if you've been following this on Twitter, Michael.
What's that?
I'm getting a lot of people, killing me saying I didn't put Namath in there.
Well, Namath didn't have a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Namath was 17 for 28, 206 yards, and no touchdown passes. Now, listen, he had the guarantee, but I'm sorry. Is that one of the great playoff performances of all time? It's legendary because it's of the fair, guarantee and the upset, but stop it. And again, I think the upset's overrated.
You know what Joe Namath would say about people trying to do this?
What?
You're reaching.
Very well done.
But I do like the fact that people, hostile people,
go ahead,
will just find anything wrong with the top five, like to argue. And I guess that's good. I don't know why they have to be so vicious about it. Like, hey, Don, did you ever consider? That's fine. Ridiculous list. No Matt Stewie.
I know.
Ridiculous. How do you not include Namath? Then I love, what about the 96 Yankees? I can't help if you can't hear. Did we say teams, Michael?
No.
And then what about Tom Brady? Did we mention outside of New York? I can't get you to listen. I don't know what the heck to tell you.
Don't get emotional and upset about this.
No, please don't. No.
But it's fun.
I don't want you to. By the way, Michael, is there a rule that's been written by the baseball gods of Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge can't hit at the same time?
Yeah, Aaron's starting to have a little bit of a slump. 1 for 10 with 6 strikeouts.
It's worse than that. I don't know what it goes back before that, but I know
9 for 36, which is not terrible. That's 250.
Yeah, I mean, it's down from where he was because right before that he was at 310. And meanwhile, Gary's all the way up to 225. They're going to meet in the middle.
No, I think that, you know, there's always a leveling off, and I believe that Judge is just in a little bit of a correction, but he'll be back. He's like a 290 hitter, I think.
And where do you think Sanchez will land?
If he gets to 250, the Yankees will have a party, but he'll probably be about in the 230s because he's going to have a come down too. Just this climb, it's like you know, you're so far behind in a race, and then you put all this emphasis to catching up, and then there's going to be the automatic slide back too. You don't want the automatic slide back, do you, Peter?
No.
Do you think Guerrero Jr. can hit for the Triple Crown?
Yes, he could. Yes, he could. I believe he can. Right now, he's up for it. If the season ended today, he'd have it.
If only I'd bought a perfect Gem Mint 10 Vladdy rookie last year. Oh, wait, I did.
Oh, how much did that set you by?
I spent a couple $100 on a good one.
Well, get rid of it now. You never know what's going to happen in the future.
That's not how you're supposed to do it.
That's what you do with stocks.
I think Peter's getting into Michael's neighborhood.
What do you mean, money-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
What?
Please. If you add up all my jobs, do they hit one of Michael's jobs, Don? That's the question you need to sit down and analyze tonight. Which job you think?
The Yankee job.
The Yankee job.
Yeah. He makes more money from ESPN than the Yankees, I think.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I know that.
Michael, pipe down for a second. That's an interesting thought, Don.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.